I will gather Jacob together, all of you, as many as I gather. I will assemble the remnant from Israel, united, as many as I assemble. I will set them as a flock in a pen in Bozra, and in the midst of the pasture will be arrayed a great tumult of men. Micah chapter 2, verse 12, that was, from the version of Yours Truly, 2003, our daily scripture for today, little children. We've got an illustration of Poseidon in our article, Joseph and On, which is the beginning of paragraph 57. In this article, which is our job for today, among succeeding paragraphs perhaps, which may also be included, but to the left here we have an illustration of Poseidon facing away from the painter. It's a painting by James Lyon. It's fairly modern, so there's no year given for it. Perhaps it's associated with some game, or a video game maybe. I'm not sure what it is, or what the date is. But we see him, he appears to be completely naked, nude, without any garment whatsoever. I'm trying to see, what is this in his hand? He's holding something in his hand, a seashell, right. Didn't see that before. And he's got his trident in his left hand as well. But he's got long hair. Again, it's either blonde or gray-ish. He's quite young, it looks like, in this painting. And his bare buttocks are quite exposed and prominent in this painting. His arms are bronze, but there's light reflecting brightly from his posterior there. With Zeus as ruler of the gods, Hades ruling the underworld, the ruler of the earth and sea is Poseidon. He was sometimes said to dwell at the bottom of the ocean and rode a chariot over the water. Apollo rides a chariot across the sky and is identified with Horus, in brackets Helios. Since the sun also goes down below the sea at night, and it dominates the earth and water during the day, Helios and Apollo represent the same role as Poseidon, perhaps. Helios marries Clymene, that is, and Clymene is the name of a type of dolphin since 1850 CE. There's that date, 1850, our pivotal date in the genealogy, too, on the other side of the Common Era, in 1850 BCE, which was the year when Joseph was about 103 years old. The dolphin is also a symbol of Poseidon, so this is rather interesting that the name of a dolphin was given in 1850 of our Common Era. Helios, Apollo, and Poseidon, like the gods of Egypt, Atum, Amun-Re, and Osiris, had connection with the sun and with healing and saving power it possessed. Also, the Bennu bird, as the phoenix, is represented in Roman myth in some sense as the winged chariot of Phoebus. While all of these had strong relation to the sun, the parents of Helios, Hyperion, and Theia, day and night in Greek mythology, as Geb and Nut, or Geb and Night, actually, we can pronounce it, parents of Osiris in Egyptian mythology, were given some kind of earthly dominion. That is, the parents of Helios, Hyperion, and Theia, who were day and night, and also Geb and Night, who may also have been Day and Night, but Geb, we don't know if he was called Day or not. Night, certainly the name of his wife, though, so we have quite a correspondence between those parents of Helios and the parents of Osiris, one from the Greek, one from the Egyptian mythology, or mythologies, plural. And they were both given some kind of earthly dominion, both sets of parents, right? Both sets of these, both the parents of Helios and the parents of Poseidon. Poseidon seems to have powers beyond even the sun. And with him identified as Joseph, as we have seen, do not Joseph's parents, Jacob and Rachel, fit with Cronus and Rhea, the parents of Poseidon? The details of the family relations of all of these gods are manifold. We saw already what the fit was, how they fit together. The comparison of Cronus with his sickle, and you know, he being also the son of Isaac, who's identified with the sickle too. So we have Cronus, and we have Rhea, whose name is like Rachel's name and also like Leah's name, both of whom were wives of Jacob. So we've identified Jacob with Cronus and Rhea with Rachel, and therefore they fit with Joseph as Poseidon, their son, in Egypt, dominating the water and the earth, because he dominated the water in two ways, both by overcoming the drought and also by storing up the grain for the famine years, but also he overcame the drought by his great construction work on the great canal that bears his name, Joseph's Canal, that led to the development or produced this Lake Moeris that was able to irrigate the whole of Egypt in the area of that lake. And the details and this water system that Joseph built would qualify him as being called Poseidon, as well as the other great salvation he performed with regard to the drought. The details of the family relations of all of these gods are manifold. It makes one wonder if this is not what one would see in a real human family. More than that, it seems miraculous that the details of Joseph's parents fit as well as with the parents of Osiris or Helios. Osiris being the god of agriculture, and that fits Joseph perfectly too, and or the god of fertility, that's Osiris. And we have Helios, the god of the sun, and the parents of both of those. It seems miraculous that the details of those parents fit with the details of Joseph's parents so well. Doesn't that seem miraculous? It's hard to deny anything like that, but yet it's been denied for centuries, millennia even. The Great Sphinx of Giza, we have an illustration of here. The link is broken, but it was from the DoD media that we got this Great Sphinx of Giza photograph. Look at this photograph. It's a really beautiful photograph with the... I'm not sure how the resolution is. Let's click it and see. Because I saved it. It's on my hard drive? Oh, maybe not. Yeah, here it is. It's on my hard drive. It's on my website. So there it is. It is large, isn't it? It's a very, very high resolution photograph. Look at that. So we can really look at the details of this Sphinx of Giza here. Look at this. Isn't this magnificent? What a photograph. Let's just, maybe you want to keep it slightly lower resolution and then magnify. Look at that. It's in the shadow, so you can't see the left eye of the Sphinx, rather. You can't see it very clearly there. It's rather obscure. What a fantastic photograph that is. And although there appear to be, continuing to read, multiple versions of what is our story in the Greek mythology, comparing it with Egyptian and Roman versions, enables us to sort out the details with ease, and for the first time, the difficult task of unraveling the mythology appears possible. Let me show you something. Look at the 12 Titans. Isn't it rather an interesting correspondence that, and in fact, another proof that there are 12 Titans in Greek mythology? So Jacob had 12 sons also. Even though these 12 Titans were not the sons of Cronus, as they would be if there were a direct correspondence, Cronus is one of the Titans, and his wife Rhea is also one of the Titans, and we also have Hyperion as one of the Titans, and Thea, his wife. So by having Thea and Rhea, we've got, it looks like Leah and Rachel, both, as well as Hyperion being the same person as Cronus, as Jacob in the Bible. But we've got the 12 Titans, and they were said to be, look who they were said to be, the progeny of, they were said to be, that is, the progeny or the children of Uranos, or, you know, the Greek god for sky, Uranos, and his wife Gaia, whom we identified with Isaac and Rebecca before. Father Sky and Gaia, Mother Earth, right? The descendant of Terra. So we have perfect correspondence with the fact that the 12 Titans were the grandchildren. If they were the sons of Jacob, the 12 Titans, or if the 12 Titans refers to 12 progeny, which we know existed in the case of Jacob, he had 12 children. Jacob fits perfectly as the father of the Titans, but they're said to be the children of Jacob's father. Well, that just means they're grandchildren. Grandchildren of Isaac and Rebecca, and they're children of the 12 sons of Jacob, that is, or the children of Jacob, the grandchildren of Isaac. So there is a correspondence. Very great correspondence, all, you know, the difference being that here the Titans are not all, they're all the children, it says, of Isaac, but they're not all children of Jacob according to this. In fact, none of them may be actually the children of Jacob as they're described here. But yes, they are, because some of them, well, the children of Cronus look like the children of Jacob. That we've seen before, Zeus, we think, is Judah, Poseidon is Joseph, Hades is Reuben. So we've identified, you know, a huge number of the descendants of one of the Titans as being the 12 children of Jacob, right? I mean, a huge number, considering that there shouldn't be any correspondence according to conventional teaching. We've identified these people from the Bible, which is the first time ever that this has been done. The first time it's ever. It's a first time groundbreaking research. This article was written in 2010, in the early months of that year. For the first time ever, the difficult task of unraveling the mythology appears possible. No one ever taught me this in school. We learned, and many others did with me. We learned the mythology, the Greek and Roman mythology, but it didn't mean anything to us. Why would it? It was not associated with anything real. But here, now, there was apparently a good reason for believing it back in 2010 as well, but there is a good reason to believe that these are real people being described by the mythology, and they're the people of the Bible. But it becomes a blessing in the sense that many of the human elements, even though it's a difficult task, right, of unraveling the mythology, it appears possible, and it becomes a blessing in the sense that many of the human elements contained in the myths are the very things that had been missing from the histories and biblical accounts. Praise Jehovah. When we saw the Bible accounts, we saw a sort of a bare bones account, right? We didn't get the feeling of this is real family feelings, you know, that this is a real family and they have real passion and there's things happening, you know, that are normal things for a family. Not really did we get all of that from the Bible, because the Bible was, we got some of it, but we didn't get enough of it to get the feeling that it's a complete account. See, it looks like some of these things were not lost, but transferred into the mythologies, the accounts of the oral story, the oral accounts of the times. And that people told one story about the legend of Joseph as not Messiah, but Poseidon. Sorry about the similarity between the names, but Poseidon, you know, being the man who dominated, so this god, he became a god to them, he was a god. But that's because as the story got older, he would become a god. But they preferred to tell their stories perhaps as from the point of view of humans worshipping the gods. The true God causes a reason for us to grow, making in his people the room for the wisdom required to understand the new truth and enabling us to become better people in the process of learning it. Bless him in the heights above. Robert Louis Stevenson, we found out the Stevenson family is, well, my wife, my late wife Anne, she had Stevensons in her family, so we found out some connection. I was looking into this, how close a relative Robert Louis Stevenson may have been to my wife. I'm not sure if I wrote that in her genealogy. It's together with my genealogy at the end of mine. Is hers. I can't remember what the connection was now, whether there was a connection. There couldn't have been a direct one because I would have remembered that. But Robert Louis Stevenson. Anne Stevenson, who was that? That was her, I think that was her grandmother on, is it Anne Stevenson who married David Muir? I can't remember now. But I'll look at that again sometime soon. But her mother was Elizabeth Muir, and what was her father's name? George Rutledge. Yeah, George Rutledge married Elizabeth Muir, and their daughter was my late wife Anne Elizabeth Rutledge. No, Anne. No, it was Anne Ruth Rutledge, my late wife. Right, Anne Ruth Rutledge, but Elizabeth Muir was her mother, and her mother was Anne Stevenson, I believe, who married David Muir. The very year now, in 1850 CE, Robert Louis Stevenson was born again. And look at that year, 1850. There it is again, 1850 of the Common Era. The very year in which William Wordsworth died. I'm trying to think, could Anne Stevenson have been the mother of George Rutledge or not, or trying to think. I want to look that up. Let me look up, let's find it here. I don't know how to find it except to go onto Google. Is this it here? Oh, that's an old version of it, I think. It's a very old version of it. Okay. The newer version. That's still not new enough. Okay, I'll look up. I know what I'll do. I'll look up Anne Stevenson. I don't know how to spell her name. Anne with an E or not. And then we'll search our website here that we've been using all this time. That might be it there. Yeah, this is the latest version of it. Ooh, that's not the... That's 2017. It wasn't the up-to-date version. I know, okay. I think I'm spelling her name wrong anyway. We'll search for... Well, there it is, look. Under Sweet Family. It's under that. For some reason. There it is. Yeah, David Muir married married Ann Stevenson. And they were the parents of Elizabeth Muir. So that is what I thought. Now, James Ingram Rutledge was the father of George Rutledge. And George Horace Rutledge, who married Elizabeth Muir, his mother was Elizabeth Ann Welsh. Elizabeth Ann Welsh married James Ingram Rutledge. So there were several Anns there, or two anyway. But and there were two Elizabeths, two Anns. James Ingram Rutledge, Elizabeth Ann Welsh had a child, George Horace Rutledge, who married the daughter of David Muir and Ann Stevenson, whose name was Elizabeth Muir, and the daughter of George Rutledge and Elizabeth Muir was Ann Ruth Rutledge. That's my wife's immediate genealogy, but yeah, I was able to find quite a few more details about her genealogy that went back six generations. Mr. Stevenson wrote the books Treasure Island and Strange Case of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, 1883 and 1886. Of our common era, respectively, and passed at the age of 44 years. He died young, like Harriet 80. My great-grandmother died young, too, in her 40s. And so Robert Louis Stevenson died at the age of 44 years in 1894 of the common era. The year 1850 of the Common Era is the year the Fugitive Slave Law was passed by the U.S. Congress. Also, it is in 1850 of the Common Era. It was the year of the Fugitive Slave Law, but it was also in that year that Millard Fillmore becomes the President of the United States, the 13th. And that mile times begin to be accurately measured in track and field after the construction of accurately measured tracks. The gold rush of 1848 CE in California was ongoing, and in 1850 CE, California was admitted to the Union as part of the Compromise of 1850. The American system of watch manufacturing began in Roxbury, Massachusetts, USA, with the Waltham Watch Company, 1850. And I still have my Waltham watch that I bought, which was a chronograph. I think I bought it for about $70 back in, well, what did I determine? I was probably... I was under 18 years old anyway when I bought it, before I finished high school. So, and I remember that, but I remember using it even recently. I put it away in a drawer because the chronograph part had broken. So it was in a drawer, in my drawer, with me for all those decades until just recently I took it out and used it again. The watch part of it worked to keep time until it finally stopped working. Recently, and I bought some new 12 new watches actually, because I thought, well, maybe I won't use them all and they'll last me longer than the original chronograph had lasted me. And many of those new ones are chronographs too, but not all of them. Jim Thorpe, actually, the majority are not chronographs, I believe, but a picture of Jim Thorpe in 1912 from the Summer Olympics of Stockholm, Sweden. And I gave a speech about Jim Thorpe in high school. I'm not sure what year I gave that speech. It was a public speaking contest, I believe, or something. There was one in our high school, but I'm also thinking that I gave a speech in the auditorium, in the gymnasium, rather, which was not necessarily meant to be. I'm not sure if that was the public speaking contest or not. I can't remember that, but I gave a speech in the gymnasium for quite a number of students in high school that I remember. It was about Jim Thorpe, who had a remarkable athletic career. Just incredible. It was an incredible career. In 1954, 104, approximately 104, or 8 times 13 years later, in the numbers, it's 104 years, like between 1954, 104 years after that, right? When Mr. Roger Bannister broke the 4-minute mile, Joseph's birth, years after 1850 of the Common Era, when the Waltham Watch Company was established, and we talked about the other things that happened in 1850 of the Common Era. 104 years after that is 1954. Right? 100 years after 1850 is 1950, and then 4 more years. And that was when Mr. Roger Bannister broke the 4-minute mile. And in that year, 1954, Joseph's birth mirrors the event in the Common Era, because he was born in 1954 BCE in our chronology. And in the year 1850 BCE, which is 104 years later than his birth, because the BCE, remember the BCE years count backwards, so they have to, because they're counting from larger to smaller numbers. But Joseph, son of Jacob, is 104 years old in that year 1850. Or, you know, actually, we think he's 103 for part of that year, and 104 for part of that year. This being the key year of the blessed genealogy, the dear chronology of the world, and the family history of Adam. The number 104 is the age of Joseph only late in the year 1850 BCE, and the number 13 multiplied by 8 is what? 804. 8 tens is 80, and 80 plus 8 times 3, which is 24. 80 plus 24 is 104. The number 13 is connected, as we have seen, with Joseph. He was in slavery. That's if you've read the article Joseph, you would know that. He was in slavery and then was in prison for a total of 13 years after he arrived in Egypt. At the age of 17, he arrived in Egypt from the Bible. But 13 years later, he was 30 years old and became a citizen when he was appointed as second in command of Egypt by the Pharaoh. From Adam in 5550 BCE, when JHVH first let the tetragrammaton, the four letters of Jehovah's name without the vowels, first created Adam, until Joseph's freedom in 1923, there are 3 times 3 times 13 times 31 years. Plus 1923, the year that Joseph was appointed in our chronology as king of all Egypt, second only to Pharaoh. 5550 is the answer to that summation. So it is 3 times 3 times 13 times 31 years from Adam, when Joseph became ruler of Egypt, second in command. And if you go three illustrations after the halfway point of the article Joseph, if the point taken as halfway is the illustration of Rachel's tomb on the Palestinian postage stamp, go three illustrations to just above the illustration of the rock-cut tombs at Beni Hassan. Can we do that? Let's see. We've got our article Joseph here. Let's go halfway and find that the tomb of Rachel or the Beni... That's the ziggurat. Okay. We must be close. There's Rachel's tomb, the postage stamp, right? And so we just said, if that's the halfway point, Rachel's tomb, looks like it is pretty well, the halfway point, go three illustrations beyond that. One, two, and three. Where do we get to the third illustration? There it is. Okay. Here's the three squared times 13 times 31. Just before the illustration of the rock-cut tombs at Beni Hassan. So it's in the article Joseph. You can look it up and read about that if you would like to. And we have another illustration, but we're just about out of time. This is by Rubens. Peter Paul Rubens. Isn't that his name? I think it is. Maybe we'll click on it and see what happens. It doesn't take us to the Wikipedia article on that, though, or on Rubens, but that's it. It's this painting about, it's called Abundance by Rubens. It's a painting which is somber colors, with it looks like the moon shining. Is that supposed to be the sun? Maybe it's the sun. But it's a very dim lit painting. Dimly lit and dark colors, perhaps because the painting got layers of dirt on it over the ages. But it's got these two babies or nymphs picking up fruit from the ground or things that have been spilled out from the Horn of Plenty, which is being held by the goddess there with a crown on her head and one of her breasts partially exposed, and she's got these wonderful flowing garments over her shoulder, her left arm and her body, as well as the one of the babies is nude, actually, I think, but he's bending over. We can't see him except from the side view, and we've got the other baby and all the fruit of plenty, and we are done today. It's February 9th. The date is 2025 of the Common Era. I almost said 1850, and it's 2327 hours Canadian Eastern Time. Ward Green with you. I love you very much. And in my behalf, this is Sissy, and this is Star, saying bye for now.